Come down to the little garden with me. Come go with me. Come go and see.
This is SGV Weekly, your fix of the 626. I'm your host, Chris Greenspawn.
Are you still the same? Are you still the same? Carry on. I have returned.
I used to think I would never bring somebody else's podcast on my podcast.
You can't always get what you want.
But this week, we're throwing self-consciousness in the trash with Isimo.
We cover ideas and topics versus we're not, like we said, we're not a gossip podcast.
Isimo is a podcast about Mexican-American culture hosted by three local comics.
The first guests we ever had were our mothers, dude.
And they talk about everything from the Hot Cheetos scandal.
That was one of my favorite episodes that we did. Yeah. And it literally was the day before we got a text that was like, check this out. And we were like, yeah. Fuck!
To the Aztec death whistle.
They took something that was supposedly sacred and part of an old religion, so it meant something to these people, and they turned it into a $9 toy on Amazon.
But mostly, they just struggle with Spanish.
Welcome back to Isimo
Podcast.
We're going to talk all about the Pocho Blues coming up on SGV Weekly. Now for some local news. Jason Henry at the Tribune reports film productions in Sierra Madre might not have to get neighborhood approval anymore. Allegedly, fake signatures were used on permits for the Paramount series about the making of The Godfather. The company hired to get the signatures says they subcontracted the job and they're looking into it. The city says it didn't verify the signatures, just took them in good faith. Now the city attorney and film monitor for Sierra Madre want to get rid of the requirement for 51% of neighbors to sign off on a project. They're proposing shorter filming schedules to make up for it, and some residents are pissed about the possible change. The Tribune also reports that Cal Poly's iconic CLA Tower, you know, the pointy one you can see from the 10, is being torn down. All 54,000 square feet of it, floor by floor, top to bottom, without any explosions, if that's your thing. The building's had problems for decades, mechanical, operational, plus it's on top of an earthquake fault. The plan is to replace it with greenery, and demolition is supposed to be finished by August. And in case you didn't hear, Azusa High and Gladstone High are merging into one school. Tribune covered that too. They'll keep the Aztec's name, but there's going to be a mascot change, which will require some repainting and such. The school board voted unanimously for it. No word on what that new mascot will be, but it'll replace the indigenous figure that the school's had for decades. I know this is old news, but here are some public comments from the school board meeting that are worth hearing to get the community's perspective.
Put the money where it belongs and don't put it on something frivolous as changing the name, changing the Aztec, because, you know, there's pride in that.
The consideration of losing the Aztec feeds into council culture and the gentrification of the city of Azusa.
You guys are wrong in changing our Aztec. Everybody loves our Aztec.
I hope that as students move forward in the selection process, we can partner with local groups, Native tribes, to select a representative that is respectful of Native beliefs.
When SGV Weekly returns, it's the unexpected blow-up of Isimo Podcast.
And he just starts screaming to the whole parking lot, yeah, like, I'm a fucking successful guy. He don't want to listen to me? He don't want to listen to me? And Ryan, he doesn't even remember. Ryan doesn't even remember. It was the best moment of his life.
That's so funny.
Support for SGV Weekly comes from
Dr. Rubin's Pomade, made in Alhambra with a secret recipe since World War II that nourishes your hair with natural ingredients. It comes in flavors like melon, chocolate, and cherry, but please don't eat it. Try their lip balm instead. It lasts for hours. Get yours at drrubinspomade.com and use promo code SGVWeekly at checkout for 15% off. That's drrubinspomade.com.
South El Monte Arts Posse.
Isn't it time El Monte got a new city logo? I mean, how many covered wagons do you see driving down Valley Boulevard? Well, South El Monte Arts Posse is working on that. They want to know what you want to see on a new Monte seal. Radical Histories, the Tongva, the Water Tower. Take the survey on their Insta at SEM Arts Posse. And graphic artist Daniel Gonzalez will make a new logo only for the people of Monte who identify with the city's radical past. The unveiling will be at the LA Central Library's Something in Common exhibit on May 7th. That survey is at SEM Arts Posse on Instagram.
And John Raby, the world's tallest man. Now back to the show.
It's SGV Weekly. I'm Chris Greenspan, and this week's episode is with the hosts of Isimo. Isimo is a podcast about Mexican-American culture hosted by three comedians who don't speak Spanish, but they're really passionate, and they want to break down gatekeeping so that any Latino can get in touch with their culture. Let's listen to a clip.
I think we should start something called Latinos Anonymous, dude.
Go on.
Because think about it. Alcoholism... You don't want to get rid of your alcoholism. If you're an alcoholic, you love that shit, dude.
Oh, yeah.
You could be living on a cardboard box and be like, I'm down to drink again today. You know what I mean?
Yeah. There's no situation that you don't want to drink at.
Exactly. Yeah. So, like, Latinos, there's no situation where if they know you only speak English, they're going to say something about it, right? I don't know. I'm trying to make this connection here. Right?
I'm still waiting for them to be connected, but I'm... on board.
Well, the comparison is like they have that urge, that internal need,
yeah,
to acclimate, and that either means shitting on someone or pretending they're not Mexican.
Yeah.
And so that would be what Latino Anonymous would treat.
Exactly. So we should start writing a book and make rules and steps in order to become a better Latino, dude.
Yeah. We'll define what the perfect Latino is, yeah, and then there'll be 13 steps to get there.
Let's meet these guys. Gerardo Alarcón is a working-class guy from the Rancho, Cucamonga, lives in Alhambra now, and he's the loud one.
What makes me super Mexican? My mom the other day sent me a reel on Instagram of Denzel Washington saying this. I'm going to do my best Denzel Washington impression.
Oh, no. Just say the thing.
I know, I'm not going to do the voice impression, but this is his face when he's like, you know, a mother's first son is her last love, and a son's mother is his first true love. And that's Mexican as fuck, dude. My mom's like, don't forget. You know what I mean?
The guy who asked Gerardo not to do an impression is Dominic Angel. He's from Baldwin Park, and he's a sensitive one.
The first time that I heard that song, I almost started crying because I was like, this is exactly the kind of music that I would have listened to in high school. But there was a barrier that I feel like I kind of put in front of me where I thought that wasn't for me.
Then there's the smart one, Dominic's brother Ryan Reyes. He's sort of the moral compass of the show, bringing up harder topics like cultural appropriation and life with autism.
Nobody's asking to be given something extra. They're asking to be a part of what's already existing. And if you can live your life and be happy without caring about that, that's fine. But that doesn't mean it's not worth caring about.
Thank you for clapping. Thank you. A lot of people, some people don't like when I tell that joke. It's mostly white guys.
The three met at a comedy open mic in Covina.
Like, I'm not the first comedian to talk about this stuff. Tim the Tool Man Taylor, built his career on talking about the dumb shit that white guys do. But whenever I bring it up, all the white guys are like, ooh.
The idea to start the podcast happened while all the clubs were closed and they couldn't get on stage, but they still needed a place to talk about being Mexican-American.
That's why I started podcasting in the beginning, is because I noticed the benefit it had to my stand-up comedy. And then with this happening, it stemmed from like the frustrations of me and Dominic working for a white guy. You know what I mean? That's like the hardest days that we worked. We would kind of escape and talk about Un Poquito Más, which is the podcast that it originated as. And then basically, in the span of 2 months, we started the podcast and we both quit on the same day, you know?
Yeah.
So it's hard to really articulate where we want this to go because we did not expect, dude, it was just a form of release in a way.
Yeah.
And the first week we got some 1,200 views on our fucking first episode, dude. Are you kidding me?
Yeah.
Right? You could see it in Dominic's face on the second episode. The fact that he's thinking about the, like, this went fucking crazy big for whatever reason, you know, which is, I always make fun of him for that. But
because you knew, you believed,
he has this wide eyed view of everything, you know.
And yeah, there was excitement because
it was weird.
It was just unexpected. The first time we recorded twice. Me and Gerardo recorded twice. The second time we had Ryan, we were doing practice episodes, and then finally it was Cinco de Mayo, and
I told Dominic, because Dominic, I was like, are we good to release this one? Because we did three episodes practice.
Oh, three, yeah.
I have them all still.
Yeah.
And every time he had some issue with the episode. So I told him, I was like, this one's fucking coming out on Cinco de Mayo.
We gotta.
You know, we have to drop it. And so I edited the episode heavily, right? Because it was a lot of dead air and whatnot. But if for whatever reason, it struck a chord with a lot of people. You know, we edited the first clip together in my old apartment. And it got like 800,000 views. And it got us however many listeners and viewers on our YouTube and Spotify and all that stuff.
Here's their first TikTok.
I was at a Mexican party where the drummer was fucking terrible. Could not keep a beat to save his life, dude. Songs that were like probably 6 or 7 minutes long became like 2 minutes long because they're just like, what the fuck? You know? And he's just like, are you fucking doing that drum? I was like,
just wait a couple of years.
Just wait a couple of years. I'll get better. So like, fuck, I'm trying my best.
That was last May, but Gerardo was sitting on the name Isimo for years, actually. And Dominic liked it because it means the most or the biggest. So now that they had a name, they just needed a theme song.
Shout out to Jose Cruz Jr. from Twin Seas and True Sound Recording. That fool's the mastermind behind the theme song. I showed him a reference song by Plastina Mosh because I was like, do you think you could do something like this? And he listened to it and he's like, this is exactly what I write. Like, he had never heard the song before. So, but he was like, hell yeah, dude, I'll do it right now. And like, that I sent him like in the span of 30 minutes, I sent him three different videos and I was like, dude, you're not going to fucking believe this. And I kept playing the videos.
Meanwhile, I'm producing the first episode. This has all happened like within like a day, dude.
Yeah.
Because we recorded on Cinco de Mayo and the episode dropped on Cinco de Mayo and I didn't start the audio only until the next day, and the audio only version has the song on it, the first episode.
Yeah, the audio only version. Oh yeah, because when it dropped, that's when our clips started popping.
Yeah.
And then so like it all culminated like literally like he was saying, it's unfathomable like how everything came together, because it was literally in a snap. Like
very theatrical. Like, yeah, those plays about bands, like Jersey Boys. It was like a Jersey Boys moment. I'm not kidding. Like, it sounds silly to say, but it was like a Jersey Boys moment.
Yeah, and then Gerardo walked out going, shit.
Don't make me.
don't bring it up.
Sorry, Bobo.
But yeah, Jose wrote that song in like 45 minutes. The intro and the outro. That fool's a fucking genius.
Now they're a few dozen episodes in, tens of thousands of downloads a week, millions of TikTok streams, and God knows how many haters.
We're considered bochos, no sabos. Like, whenever we promote with our clips online, like, we get called out for being no sabo or being bocho all the time, or people are always, like, hating on us for not representing real Mexicans.
That's the pocho paradox.
On one side, you have to acclimate to fit in, and if you can't, you're teased for it. And on the other side, if you acclimate too much, then you're sold out and you're teased for that.
And that's nothing new.
If my family were here, they would tell you I'm not Mexican. You know what I mean? Like, they wouldn't even flirt with the idea that I am. Like, you know, are you kidding me? You wanted an N64 when you were a kid. You didn't want to fucking, you know, milk the cows or whatever. Like, whatever they say, right?
Turns out a lot of people relate.
We have friends that are fifth generation in the United States, you know? And they're Mexican. They look like they're from Mexico. They're dark. They have indigenous features, but they don't speak Spanish. They don't have like ties to that culture. And a lot of the reactions that we got for just doing this is thank you, because now I feel Mexican.
And for $20 a month, you get a shout out on the podcast just like this, fool. Shout out to Alex Knotts, Alex Nunez, Aparni Rani, David Serato, Eddie Bravo, Imperium Sloth, and a new one, dude. And I feel like they're giving me hard names just to fuck with me now, dude.
What is?
Z El Tino.
Those are their jaritos, or Patreon givers, who get to hear special episodes for like $5 a month. I'm thinking about giving, because growing up in the SGV, I was a pocho. You were a pocho. We all know pochos. So it's hard not to think that coming from these suburbs has everything to do with what they're talking about. Like Baldwin Park.
It's kind of like a perfect metaphor for our experience as Mexican Americans, like, because it is in the middle And, you know, we all have experienced the thing where we travel out of state or we travel far away. And then people are like, oh, where are you from? And we just say Los Angeles. But if somebody that lives in Glassell Park hears me say that I'm from L.A. and they're like, Baldwin Park's not L.A., fool. Like, you know, so it, and it is in that it's like definitely in the middle where I think like we're tangential to L.A. And so we're like close to where the culture is. But like people that are further east, it's like a whole different thing. And so we're a mixture of the two. And I think like San Gabriel Valley has a lot of history and it mimics a lot of other historical neighborhoods. It's very similar to a place like Boyle Heights or San Fernando Valley, Valley Glen, Huntington Park, like those areas. San Gabriel Valley has just as much culture and history there that I think people don't think about. They just see us as not being LA.
But Gerardo, on the other hand, is more cynical about the relationship between the suburbs and LA.
I went to the movies with my girlfriend in Ontario and to the movie theater that I used to sneak into as a kid, right? Because I grew up in Rancho, Cucamonga. But there was more, I guess you could say, like social media Mexicans there. You know what I mean? Like you see Edgar's online and stuff. You see these kind of things on Foods Gone Wild. And I don't see that walking around or driving around, rather, in like South Central or East LA, Boyle Heights. Driving around here, I don't see that. But I walk out of the car and I see it everywhere because it's like, it's they're like trying, I don't know, in my opinion, all right, I feel as if they kind of just emulate their phone in a way. Out here, there's more community. There's more realness, in my opinion. Listen, Los Angeles is the fakest city of all time. Like, you know, you could look at that at, like as a negative or not, but that's our number one export is fake people. You know what I mean?
I think that's the number one import.
Yes. There we go.
I think there's also like what Gerardo was saying about people being on their phones and like mimicking social media. I think that Los Angeles is on major cities. I'm sure this is similar in Texas or Chicago or wherever, you know, we are. But like LA specifically, I think that's where culture happens. And that's what people see. And then so when you're living further east, you want to connect to that. And they mimic that because, you know, we feel that we're not in touch with our culture. So you have to wear like markers of proof.
Okay, so whether or not suburban Chicanos are as Mexican as first generation immigrants and their kids is a very sore subject. But that authentic working class culture has gotten pushed out of the city more and more. And ironically is ending up out here. I mean, people say the best comedy club in L.A. is in Covina.
You guys ready for a comic right now?
I know one thing that we can all celebrate is the Chatterbox.
Yep.
That's where their dreams were born. Right across from 399 Pizza.
The Chatterbox is really cool. I mean, it's like, it's a hole-in-the-wall dive bar. And it's something where if you drove by it, you probably, like, would think it's a terrible place. And if you read the Yelp reviews... you'd probably think it was terrible.
It had the worst reputation until
it had the worst reputation for a long time, but I don't know the owner, you know, but I think they I think he took ownership like in the last 10 years or however long and really turned it around. And you know, Steve Hernandez cultivated a really cool comedy scene where he brought a lot of people from LA. It's kind of one of those things, like I feel very similar to like downtown Pomona. And like stuff that was happening at the DAW and at Bridgetown DIY in La Puente, where it's like you don't have to go to LA to get quality entertainment or quality art.
I have a cousin named Cookie. Oh shit, that fool's macadamia nuts, dog. Always made that, what's up?
Dominic says that the Chatterbox is different because it's actually run by somebody who cares about comedians. And Ryan says it's really helped him with his autism.
I wasn't like mute, but I was like, it was very hard for me to meet new people, which is like a weird concept to some people. Like, how do you meet anyone then if you can't meet new people, if you don't already know them? It was just, it takes me a very long time to get used to people in a personal sense. So it was very hard to me to introduce new people into like my circle of living, like my personal point of view of the world. And comedy allowed me to form my own voice. And Chatterbox happened to be the place where I started that. And because of that, I gained more confidence in myself.
Hello. Brass top. I want to mention I have autism. So throughout the night, if you get any weirdo creeper vibes from me, just know it's not intentional. I just don't realize that I'm being so obvious about it.
So that little dive bar behind the used car lot is actually a place comedians really want to play. Even at their open mic, you meet some weird characters at these things, like this voice actor who tried to take Ryan under his wing.
He's the kind of guy that would go to an open mic and tell you about how famous he is, but he's at the same open mic as you. So really, where is he at in life kind of thing? Ryan did really well on stage, right? Ryan is a staple of the Chatterbox. Like, he's been, I think, on the most Sunday shows out of all three of us, which is a big deal for open micers in this area.
Yeah.
And look, okay, stop doing those eyebrows, Ryan. what's it called? But so Ryan does really well on stage, walks outside, and this guy's having a cigarette outside, right? And he's telling him, man, you're fucking funny, but like, you got to speak up, you got to be louder, right? And Ryan doesn't stop walking. He doesn't even, he like kind of looks at him like this, but he just keeps walking to like a car. And then he just drives Jeff Garcia insane. And Jeff Garcia is like, yeah, don't listen to me, fool. I only made $13 million, you know, this and that, whatever. And Ryan is unfazed by it, dude. He's just like walking.
I don't know this story.
You don't know, but he, you know, Ryan like likes to get a little tipsy at the mic. And Ryan, when he's drunker, will either not stop talking to you or just look at you like you're not even there, dude. You know, like it's like one end of the, but I just, when he walks by this guy, I just start laughing my ass off. It was so funny to me. And he just starts screaming to the whole parking lot. Yeah, like I'm a fucking successful guy. He doesn't want to listen to me. He don't want to listen to me. And Ryan, he doesn't even remember. Ryan doesn't even remember. It was the best moment of his life.
That's so funny. That fool sucks, dude. I hate that fool.
Because people, for the longest time, I've heard of this person.
Yeah.
I've never heard that story before, though. Everyone's like, you've met him, right? And I'm like, I don't think so. I feel like I'd hate this person.
I hope he hears this. Drive him fucking so crazy funny. Again.
And then it got to the point where after his loud, you know, rambunctious yelling about Ryan not listening to him, he's just smoking a cigarette, talking to himself, like, what the fuck? He should be just louder on stage, you know? And I was dying. I told everyone, dude. I told everyone that night. And,
imagine giving somebody notes after he just crushed.
Yeah, exactly.
That's the kind of guy this fool is. Yeah. Like, he's the worst. He's like the embodiment of like the worst in Latino comics.
Yeah.
Because he's all about competition. He's all about there's not enough space for all of us, and I made it first, so you have to respect me.
What comics love about this place is the audience. No industry types, just normal workaday people who you probably went to high school with.
Yeah, it's like doing a show in the Midwest. I mean, you don't even need to do like proper PC humor, but obviously the owner, very liberal guy, or like the runner of the comedy show rather, does search for more PC people. But the people at that bar would rather you say some outlandish stuff, you know? And that's kind of comforting in a way, because I feel freer personally to just like try to go down trains that I'm not going to get like, you know, thrown off the rails, you know, halfway into my bit, because there could be a punchline if I talk about, you know, whatever subject. You could just, it's ad lib. You could add whatever terrible subject there, you know, and it's comforting to me. And I'm a fucking open micer, dude, you know.
So how do the ECMO guys, as comedians and podcasters, juggle treating the audience with respect while not being held down by what some call PC culture and still be funny?
So that's the thing. In my opinion, funny is funny. That's what I believe. And if it's funny, then that's what matters. But for whatever reason, like comedy as a general idea is in like an identity crisis, where people rather go on stage and just tell you what their beliefs are as opposed to looking for laughs. Comedians that have paved the way for the fact that no comedians now are getting arrested for what they say on stage, you know, they chose to stand out amongst the bunch and say the craziest shit on stage. But that's where comedy came from. And now, for whatever reason, now we have the most freedom to say whatever we want on stage. We are held the most accountable for the things that we do stay on stage. You know, so I find that the Chatterbox allows you to, like I said, look for the punchline as opposed to being cut off mid-sentence in a way. But I'm able to complete the bit on stage and get whatever pity laugh I get at the end, you know?
So you're allowed to fail.
Exactly. And that's the biggest thing about Mexican representation that we talk about, is you have to be able to fail. Like, I don't want to be held to a standard because of the color of my skin, you know, or because of the stereotypes of Mexican work ethic. Like, I didn't work hard enough, therefore I shouldn't even be on stage because I'm a Mexican on stage, you know. Anyways, yeah, that's what I mean.
Yeah. In my opinion, I feel like there was always a misunderstanding about the point of the PC movement. First of all, I think that as a kind of concept and movement has kind of died out and evolved into something new. So when people refer to PC, you're always hearing it from people who hate PC. But what they consider to be, that's how you phrase it, or what's PC and what's disrespect. That's the misunderstanding, is that what one people think is pandering is just acknowledgement of another people. Like, I use this metaphor of, like, there's people eating at a table and everyone has their own space, and one person's kind of been taking other people's spaces. And so all that, nobody's asking you to give me some of your space. I'm asking you to respect that I have my own space. That's the difference. And so when I think it's funny when comics are anti-PC, because they're just anti, they just want to say the shitty things that they've always said. But the thing is, the things that were shitty were always shitty. Just nobody was comfortable enough to stand up against it before. And now you have the freedom to stand up against things that you never liked.
Gerardo, for his part, says he got punched in the face with liberal views in the last 2 years. But he's here moderating a conversation with two friends whose politics are way to the left of his own. So where's that come from?
I'm sober. I go to 12-step programs to help me stay sober. And one of the things that stuck out to me at the beginning was brutal honesty. Because taking an inventory of my life, I've noticed that everything kind of went downhill and it started with a lie. So I try to stay and remain brutally honest. With that being said, like, I grew up in a very conservative household. Whether it's jokingly or not, my mom watches Fox News all day long. It's her entertainment in a way. So, like, that's where I come from. And I came home to eat chorizo burritos while watching Bill O'Reilly. But, you know, that is my perspective. So I take credence to everything that has happened in my life. I make sure that all those aspects of my life motivate where I go to in the future. So when I see obvious things that my higher power puts in front of me, that, you know, whether I'm doing something wrong or ineffectively, then I start to, you know, gander around and look at other views. Like, without being political and whatnot, like, that is who I am as a person. I'm willing to change my point of view, right? So when I ask questions, whether it come from my past experiences or how I truly believe now, like my ideology now, I'm trying to shape the person that will become a spectacle, you know? I don't want to be a dividing force. I want to be a unifying force.
This open-mindedness is Isimo's philosophy as a show, and it's what they'd like to see in entertainment as a whole, especially for Latinos who they want to be able to be any version of themselves. What Isimo's doing, in my opinion, is helping make a place that didn't really exist before, where Chicanos can reconnect with their culture. Is that enough, though?
Do you guys give yourselves some form of credit for positively affecting representation just by having your podcast?
It's hard to say because it feels like it can go away at any moment for me.
Yeah, I would say to a degree. I mean, it's still our first year, or like we hit a year in May, I believe.
We do have like a large Mexican listenership, which is weird.
Like a listenership actually in Mexico.
Yeah. In my opinion, we're at a point right now where we're growing, and we're. I don't know anything we've specifically inspired that isn't related to us. Yeah. Like, we've had people give us concept art and stuff. There have been people that, like, through our podcast, ask us about comedy and how to get started. Some people fans have commented that they started because of us in that regard. But I think we're still growing. It's still our first year.
Yeah, I think one of the reasons why Gerardo and I wanted to start a podcast like this in the first place was because we were not seeing a podcast that was for us, for, you know, Mexicans living in the United States that feel disconnected from our heritage and are trying to reconnect with that. And what he said about the fear of it being pulled away, you know, I will admit that, like, Latino culture is having a boom right now, that we haven't seen before. And there's a higher demand for it. But I think what comes with that is a fear that it's a trend. It's a fear that this isn't just inclusion. This is just like, it's our turn. And then, yeah, it's a fad. And then in 2 years, it's going to be someone else, you know, and that we're going to lose sight of this. So we feel like we kind of have to grow as much as we can right now that we have this attention and that Latinos are so like sought after right now before the rug is pulled out from under us.
Thanks again to our guests, Dominic Angel, Ryan Reyes, and Gerardo Alarcón. They are Eesimo Podcast, and personally, I think they're here to stay. I mean, I'll listen to them anyway. Links to all their stuff at sgvweekly.com.
And from us at Eesimo Studios, don't fly!
This is my guest spot. It always has to be what we're doing.
So carry on. I have returned through so many highways and so many tears.
All right, that's the show. Remember to visit sgvweekly.com and go to Eesimo's anniversary show on May 23 at Resident in downtown LA. Theme song by The Gun Club, courtesy Manifesto Records. Ambient music, Kevin Greenspan. Logo, Felipe Flores and Rita Greenspan. I'm Chris Greenspan. This is SGV Weekly.